This Father's Day at Lowe's, score free gifts for the greatest dad. Right now, get a free Blackstone 8-piece accessory kit when you buy a Blackstone 28-inch griddle. Plus, get two free select Craftsman V20 tools when you buy an RP brushless drill and impact driver combo kit. Shop these deals and more this Father's Day at Lowe's. We help, you save. Valid through 6/15 while supplies last. Selection varies by location.
Career changers, including veterans and active duty service members. Your transition starts here. Go from GI to IT in a matter of months. Become a certified cyber warrior with training at My Computer Career. Cybersecurity specialists are in high demand, offering IT pros great opportunities and a rewarding lifestyle while protecting our people, liberty, and treasured institutions from cyber threats. Deploy your career in IT today. Learn more at mycomputercareer.edu/CWP. SkillBridge and other VA benefits are available to those who qualify.
This is continuing coverage of the case against Lori Vallow Daybell from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Lori's last stand. Here we are. Immediately, magically, maybe it was the power of Xenu or what were the other ones that she... I mean, Xenu is Scientology, but what was the other ones she was claiming
was
to
have? The first thing that popped in my head was Loki, but no, I think I just watched like some Marvel stuff, so I'm sorry.
It's not Loki. It's some other...
Black Widow? No, it wasn't.
No. Some other magical one that, you know...
Black Panther.
For all intents and purposes, it could be that, because it really doesn't make a goddamn bit of difference, because it's all fucking fantastical shit. So, opening statements today. The judge called her bluff on the wheelchair and, oh, I'm too ill. And she was laying her head literally on the desk yesterday in open court when the jury selection was going on. And today she showed up all bright and cheery and ready to go. Before we see Lori, though, we're going to see the opening statements from the prosecution as we dive into Lori Vallow Daybell's trial number 3. This is the trial of the attempted murder of Brandon Boudreau. It's one of the lesser of charges against her, but still a pretty big charge, attempting to murder someone.
Mm-hmm.
And this, for whatever reason, seems to be the trial that Lori is trying to get out of most of all.
Mm-hmm.
But
she has to face a victim, doesn't she?
She does. Apparently facing the victim's families and the grandparents and all that didn't do it to her. But facing the one that she failed to eliminate, that seems to be the thing.
That got her attention.
It's a weird. Yeah.
Can I throw something in too?
Yeah.
To the ladies out there, I'm just going to say this.
All the ladies out there. Should I dance?
Yeah. Brandon is he's a handsome fella, but I want to say this. When you look at him, he looks very sad. He looks like a, and I don't mean, oh, he's a sad human. There's a sadness about his face and I can't put my finger on it yet. And I don't know if I ever will, but watching this footage, there was this.
Do we see him in the court testimony here? Are we about to see him? Okay. Well, mm-hmm. I would say if you're surrounded in your life by these Fs, you might have a sadness to you.
You can see that this, I'm just saying what I'm thinking here. I feel like you can see the toll it's taken on him. Yeah. He might just be a person who has sad looking eyes.
I don't know.
But there's just a tiredness look about him. And I don't, it could be a medical issue or it could just be this has worn him the fuck down.
I mean, it really could be. I have no idea. I don't know anything about Brandon Boudreau other than that this happened. All I can say is that if these people are in your circle or were in your circle and you were drinking this Kool-Aid for a period of time, you're probably not in the greatest place because these people are not healthy people. And, there may be some realization stuff. I don't know how invested he was into any of this. I just don't remember what we've heard. But enough where Lori's trying to take you out. I think he got too close to the flame there. I'm not blaming him, but it's, I think if you get too close to Lori, you don't know what the hell's going to happen. And nor did you know what was going on because she was so covert in everything that she did. So let's dive into
She's crafty.
It. She is. Opening statements. We'll start with the prosecution here against Lori Vallow-Daybell. It's the same attorney from last time, who delivered amazing closing arguments in the last trial. I wasn't super impressed with a lot of her, direct and such, but she turned it on in that those closing arguments. And I'm hoping that we got the same woman here again today. Let's watch this as it went down today in the trial of Lori Vallow-Daybell. And if you're wondering, why aren't we talking about Karen Reed today? It was a day off. And
everyone, it was too hot.
Everyone got to go into their caskets and rest. Go into the basement with the bats and shut the door. And
probably cooler in the basement. It sounds like it was too hot.
Yeah.
Well, I
question.
Like you said, don't have a good HVAC.
What do you do all summer in this place? I mean, we're really.
You sweat and you hope that everybody wore deodorant to court.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess.
Can you imagine the stench? Ooh.
Especially if you got like real grimy. I can't imagine. You know, let me say this before we go.
Okay.
I can't imagine. I mean, Karen Reed seems like someone she's very obsessed with image and how she presents herself. I bet Karen Reed smells lovely. I bet Karen Reed has a very nice scent to her. I would imagine the attorneys, they're high dollar. I don't imagine this is a trial with a lot of icky smelling people, except from the folks outside with the pink shirts on. Those folks, it's probably a BO fest. Get them into the Hot and Now burger joint right after. And Hot and Now, like five people remember that from 1989. Get them into that small little building to get burgers. You know what? You're going to get BO flavored burgers just like that.
You went there.
Yeah. Well, of course I would. They're gross. These do not look like healthy individuals out there waving flags and dancing in the street. You have nothing better to do than like, really, this is what you're doing. Despite all the evidence. I mean, even seems Turtle Boy is almost flipping on her. So, and when that happens, what do you have left? You end up looking at yourself like, oh, I was a pawn of a pawn. You're not even the pawn. Turtle Boy was the pawn. You're a pawn of a pawn. Go back, you know, go enjoy a Waffle House lunch and get the F out of the area.
Oh God, that sounds good right now.
And just, you know.
I haven't had Waffle House in probably 10 years.
Oh, they're delicious. Yeah, I like the Waffle House.
I don't have one where I am.
Yeah, you don't have a waffle. Yeah, you don't up there. I didn't try one until I lived in the South. And they're not the greatest food in the world, but their breakfast, I like their breakfast.
Isn't that the only reason you'd go there is the breakfast?
No, they got like a little burger. The reason you go there is to watch their system.
It's impressive. Did you know that they have, some people actually watch when a Waffle House closes, you need to get the fuck to your basement or your storm shelter because they are on top of the weather. If they close, the weather's about to get really bad.
Wow. No, I didn't know that one.
That's a big deal. Yeah, they
House
watch
forecast.
The weather like crazy. And if they close a restaurant in your area, you need to take shelter.
Well, they're all glass. There's no walls. It's all glass.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes sense why they're more vigilant on that.
Yeah, it's a thing.
I can't imagine really like how this started where it's like, okay, now we really need to keep an eye on the weather at Waffle House because how many people were like maimed by the Waffle House glass just exploding in their face while they're eating their waffle.
Okay, so it's called the Waffle House Index. It's real.
I love it.
So a map prepared by FEMA during a February 2014 nor'easter showing disruptions in Georgia and South Carolina.
That's not a tornado. A nor'easter is a winter storm.
Yeah, it is. So they have a green, yellow, and red. A green is they will continue to serve their full menu. If it's yellow, they'll do a limited menu. Power is either absent or delivered by a generator and food supplies are running low.
Uh-huh.
If they are on red, the restaurant is closed, which indicates there could be severe damage, severe flooding, severe destruction to the restaurant. So they just close.
Wow.
So, well, now that Doge has cut some of the National Weather Service.
Yeah.
capabilities with their weather balloons and forecasting.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to pay attention to the Waffle House.
Your Waffle House forecast. Here's your 7-day Waffle House forecast. Partly cloudy tonight. Low about 58. Tomorrow, some sunshine. High is going to be in the 80s. A little humid out there. And then we get to the next day. It's looking like a little more clouds, a little more sunshine. You can't quite be sure what's going to happen. So we're going to say a high about 75. Right now, 74 in the valley. 75 at Hidden Killers. I just bullshitted the forecast half the time I was on the air.
You a-hole. You did not.
I did.
You did not.
If I didn't if I had it in front of me, I did it. If I'm jumping on the air and all of a sudden, like, I can't find the damn paper.
Which has always happened.
Always happens.
Yep.
It's always partly cloudy. You can't go wrong.
Yeah, because the sun could be shining.
And you give a general... Yeah. Middle temperature of about what it will likely be. You start getting to the extended, you can screw
it.
When you get to the extended, you can screw it up because that stuff fluctuates quite a bit. But if you keep it kind of generally around the same area, you're pretty good. I gave bullshit forecasts for about 10 years in Wichita.
Oh God, you're killing me.
I didn't look at anything. I was just, it was partly cloudy I mean, unless it was like really severe. Those days I paid attention. Those days we went into really good weather coverage, but it was just blah. Made it up. Partly
sunny
cloudy.
Sunny in 73.
Partly cloudy every day. Could see some showers. Don't really know. Sunny, it's partly right now. And then give your, and the current temperature, that I made up all the time too. I did. There were some days where I was really off and people are like, are you sure it's like 84? Because it's like 64 in my car, right? And I'm like,
yeah, that's,
oh,
whoops.
Shit. Yeah, whoops.
Sorry,
okay.
I'm dyslexic. I read the numbers wrong.
I'll fix it next time.
Oh, the things we learn. See, I, being a co-host on a morning show for 20 years,
yeah,
I was the weather chick.
Yeah.
I had to give the forecast, so I made sure I was always hitting refresh.
Yes, because it starts... just like this, 95.5 WIFC, Eminem. Oh, wait, we never played Eminem. Hootie and the Blowfish there. Well, rarely. But maybe you did later years. But there's Hootie and the Blowfish time. It's the morning show, 7:45.
Mostly sunny today. We are going to see a high of 78. Currently, it looks like the sun finally poked out. We are at 76. Two more degrees to go.
Try the Lori Vallow Day Bell. We're getting into that today. That's exactly how it went.
That's exactly how it went.
Yep. And you taught me that because I didn't know how the hell that went.
That's exactly how it
goes. I got to find those damn tapes of us doing the morning show 27
years ago.
I've
got a tape right behind me. I just need to find something to play it in.
It's not
it
us,
it wasn't
though.
Us, though.
I have us from 20 some years ago when I filled in for Dave.
We need to find that. We need to do that on Murder in the Morning.
Yeah. Anyway, that's enough talk of your 7-day forecast. let's go into the trial. Hey, you get to know us more, I guess, on this show than you do on the others. Yes. Let's go into what we see here for this trial. And let's go into opening statements with the prosecution of Lori Vallow Daybell in the trial of Brandon Boudreaux in the murder.
Wrangler.
Or attempted murder.
The Texas license plate, no rear tire, and dark tint, was parked right up next to Brandon Boudreaux's driveway. Idle. At 9:13 a.m. on October 2nd of 2019, Brandon Boudreaux returned home. That Jeep had been idling there already for over an hour. When Brandon turned onto his street, he immediately noticed this Jeep because it was parked so close to his driveway. The back of the Jeep was facing towards him, and he immediately also noticed that there was no rear tire. He saw a Texas plate on the Jeep, and then he saw that back window of the Jeep open up, a rifle barrel come out and point at him. And then bang, he heard a shot and his window shattered. Right next to him, Brandon hit the accelerator and he took off. He turned the corner and drove a block or so away and stopped, calling 911. He talked to the operator and told them where this Jeep was going. As Brandon was speaking with the 911 operator, he had no idea that that bullet had struck his car just a few inches from his head. You'll learn that in the back of that Jeep was this defendant's brother, Alex Cox. He had been lying in wait with a rifle for Brandon to return home. This defendant, Lori Vallow Daybell, the woman seated over here, had loaned her Jeep to her brother so he could drive it to Arizona, so he could be in the back of that Jeep with a very dark tint that no one could see through and wait for Brandon to return home. The goal of this defendant and her co-conspirators? To shoot and kill Brandon Boudreaux. So let's talk about October 2nd and the weeks leading up to that. All of the actions that this defendant did in furtherance of that conspiracy and the premeditated murder of Brandon Boudreaux. I'm going to start with a little background for you. In June of 2019, Brandon Boudreaux was still married to his then-wife, Melanie. You're going to learn that Melanie is this defendant's niece. You're going to learn they were very close. And you're going to learn that they both had it out for Brandon. On June 25th, Brandon and Melanie got into an argument. And Brandon learned that this defendant had told his wife that he was gay, that he had hacked into her computer, and that Brandon was trying to work with her then-husband to take her Temple Recommend away. You're going to learn that many of the people, including Brandon and this defendant, are members of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and having your Temple Recommend taken away is a very significant event. You're going to learn and see that Brandon actually texted Lori Vallow on the 25th of June to confront her about these lies, and that she never responded. By July, just a short while later, Brandon and Melanie were seeing a mediator and proceeding through a divorce. You're going to also hear that during this time, Lori Vallow and Alex Cox lived here in Arizona. In fact, Lori lived in Chandler. You're going to hear about an incident that occurred on July 11th of 2019 in Chandler involving Lori Vallow and Alex Cox. The Chandler police were out at this defendant's residence, and they took photographs of some vehicles. One of those vehicles was a 2018 Jeep Wrangler with Texas license plates, LWD0997. That will be very important to you. They also noted that Alex had his own car, a Ford F-150. Both of those vehicles were in Chandler in July. You're going to learn that in August or September, or August through September, Lori Vallow and her brother Alex Cox moved up to Rexburg, Idaho, to be closer to this defendant's soon-to-be husband, Chad Daybell. Both of them moved into a complex at 565 Pioneer Road in Rexburg, Idaho. Lori took the Jeep Wrangler and a Nissan Rogue, and Alex brought his Ford F-150. So everyone had their own vehicles. You're going to learn that as the divorce is proceeding between Brandon and his then-wife, Melanie, that they put their house up for sale. And Melanie moved out and got a rental property. When their house finally sold, Brandon had to rent a home too. And on September 13th of 2019, he rented a house at 3875 East Phelps Street in Gilbert. Brandon will tell you his plan initially was to stay in his own house almost up to the time of the closing and then move into the rental property. You will see a text message that Melanie asked Brandon for his new address. They had children in common, so he didn't think anything of this. And he sent her the address. That was on September 17th. You'll learn that Melanie Boudreaux, this defendant's niece, was the only person who knew Brandon's address, who knew 3875 East Phelps Street, and who also knew this defendant and Alex Cox. Brandon barely moved into that house before the shooting. In fact, he'd moved in sooner than he thought because Melanie told him she was going out of town and offered him the kids for an extra weekend. And so he moved in sooner and took the kids while she flew to Rexburg, Idaho on September 26th through the 29th to be with this defendant. So in the weeks leading up to this October 2nd shooting, we'll talk about all of these things that were done in furtherance of this conspiracy, starting with Lori Vallow's Jeep. You'll learn that Alex Cox searched out a place to have extra window tinting put on the Jeep. And I say that because you're going to see the photos from the Jeep in July, and you'll see there's tinting on the windows, but you can still see into it. And so, on September 25th, Alex Cox took that Jeep to Dan's window tinting in Rexburg, Idaho, and he paid $200 to put some of the darkest tint you could put on it. You'll see those photos of what that Jeep looked like afterwards. This is the first action of this defendant, Lori Vallow, in the conspiracy, loaning her brother this Jeep and allowing him to put on these dark tint to get it ready so he can lie in wait and no one could see him in the back with that rifle. It is her first mistake, using that Jeep and tying herself to the conspiracy and to the premeditation. Also on September 25th, you're going to learn that Lori Vallow and her accomplice, Alex Cox, went to the Walmart Superstore in Idaho Falls. You're going to learn that's not far from Rexburg. And they purchased a burner phone. Now, a burner phone is a phone that you don't have to put your subscriber information to. And so, how do we know that Alex Cox was there and Lori Vallow was there? Well, you're going to learn they each had their own cell phone, like most of us do, and that Alex Cox's cell phone was utilizing Wi-Fi inside that Walmart at the time that burner phone was purchased with cash. And you'll learn that this defendant's cell phone that was subscribed to her was utilizing cell towers in the area of that Walmart at the time that that burner phone was purchased. Lori Vallow and Alex Cox knew that he would need a phone when he drove down here. But they knew, you don't want to bring your own phone. It's a great, you'll be tracked, right? So they bought this burner phone so that Alex would have contact while he drove down here and away. But Alex made a mistake. Because like any other phone, you can still use a burner phone to access Google or your Gmail accounts. And you're going to learn that Alex accessed his Gmail account. In this investigation, you'll learn the police executed many, many search warrants, and one of them was on Alex Cox's Gmail account, homerjmaximus@gmail.com. You're going to learn that Alex searched for things like window tinting in Rexburg, that he searched for places to practice shooting ranges. You're going to learn that he searched different things about angles or trajectories of shots. You're going to learn that the day before on October 1st and the morning of October 2nd, he searched 3875 East Phelps Street, where Brandon Boudreau lived. You're going to learn that after the shooting, Alex Cox actually searched for directions on how to get away through a back road. He knew he hadn't killed Brandon. Brandon's calling 911, and so he searched for Pine Top, Holbrook, Moab, Utah, Fillmore, Utah, and eventually Idaho Falls as he made his way back through back roads. You're going to learn that the police also executed search warrants on this defendant's Gmail account, lollytimeforever@gmail.com. On September 30th, the day when her brother took her Jeep and started driving down to Arizona, she searched quote, how to get the back seat out of my Jeep Wrangler. And she also searched a YouTube video, Jeep Wrangler JK Rear Seat Removal How to DIY YouTube video. This defendant continued to be a co-conspirator and to aid her accomplice, Alex Cox, by searching how to remove that back seat of the Jeep so he could better lie in wait to shoot Brandon. This was the defendant's second mistake, and more evidence of her being a co-conspirator and the premeditation. This defendant also, on September 30th, began aiding Alex by becoming his alibi. You'll hear from Nick Valance, who is an FBI agent who deals with cellular analysis, that around 4:30 p.m. on September 30th, Alex Cox's cell phone, the one that he subscribed to, moved from his apartment in this same complex where he and Lori Vallow lived to Lori Vallow's unit. And from then on for the next couple days, Alex Cox's phone remained with this defendant. Meanwhile, that burner phone from that Idaho Falls Walmart on September 30th started moving towards Arizona. You will hear that on October 2nd of 2019, at about 8 in the morning Arizona time, about an hour before the shooting, this defendant created the alibi. She had Alex Cox's phone call her phone to make it look like he was still in Rexburg, Idaho, instead of in Gilbert, Arizona. That fake call lasted about 24 minutes. Both of those cell phones were using the same cell tower in Rexburg, Idaho. This was Lori Vallow's third mistake. More evidence that she was a co-conspirator and of that premeditation to aid her brother in this shooting of Brandon Boudreau. So how do we know, though, that Lori Vallow's Jeep drove from Idaho to Arizona? Well, we're going to start by learning about what we call LPRs, or license plate readers. You will learn and see a photo of Lori Vallow's Jeep in Arizona on October 1st of 2019, up near Holbrook on the I-40. You'll hear that the DEA has a license plate reader there, and they took a photo of Lori Vallow's Jeep with that license plate LWD0997 on its way to Gilbert, Arizona. You're also going to learn that the police later recovered that Jeep back up in Rexburg, and they did a couple different search warrants on it. And what they recovered inside the Jeep, among other things, was a receipt from October 1st of 2019 from Mesa, Arizona, the day before the shooting, from a restaurant called Los Favoritos out on Power Road. You're going to learn that at the time, the burner phone is down here in Arizona. You'll learn that Alex Cox was using his Gmail and Googling an address on Power Road around the time when we then see the receipt. Alex Cox, Lori Vallow's Jeep, and Alex's rifle are here in Arizona waiting to commit this shooting. Meanwhile, up in Rexburg, on October 1st, this defendant does a little more additional help. She goes to a storage unit in Rexburg, Idaho, and rents unit C-52. The next day, on October 2nd, when this shooting is happening down in Arizona, or after the shooting, actually, she brings her soon-to-be husband, Chad Daybell, with her. And you will see video of this as she and Chad Daybell put the rear tire and the rear bench seat of that Jeep into the storage unit. Using the storage unit for that Jeep tire and that bench seat so that her co-conspirator, Alex, could lie in wait in the back of the Jeep waiting for Brandon to return home that morning. This is, again, evidence of that conspiracy and of the premeditation to kill Brandon. So October 2nd, a the morning of this shooting. You will see that Alex Cox was Googling that address, 3875 East Phelps Road. His burner phone from Idaho Falls, Idaho, is in Gilbert, Arizona. He's using his Gmail account, and he is using cell towers around Melanie Boudreau's residence. Now, this is important because Melanie knew that Brandon had their kids. They had four. She knew that Brandon that morning was going to have to drop off three of the kids at school and that they would exchange their youngest. They would meet at a park. Brandon would text Melanie, let her know he was there. She would respond, and they would exchange their youngest child. While Brandon was leaving his house to take his kids to school, that Idaho burner phone moves to his residence and begins waiting for him. Alex kept the Jeep running as he waited for Brandon to return. What Melanie didn't know was that Brandon was going to the gym after dropping off the kids, and so Alex had to wait longer. You'll hear that one of Brandon's neighbors noticed this Jeep. It's a neighborhood that doesn't have any real easy ingress or egress. You'll see a map of it. So there's very little through traffic. And so the neighborhood knows and recognizes most of the same cars. And you'll hear from a neighbor that as he was backing out, he saw this Jeep parked the wrong way on the road, nose to nose with another vehicle that he did recognize. He saw the dark tinting. He saw it was running. And he thought it just stood out as unusual in his neighborhood. It made him actually look into his rearview mirror to note it had a Texas license plate. This was about 30 plus minutes before Brandon arrived home. When Brandon got to the house that day, Alex was ready with the rifle. And we know that he was able to just lift up that back window because the tire wasn't on it. Alex fired one shot. Luckily, he did not hit Brandon. You will see that Brandon was driving a Tesla at the time. And unlike many cars, there's no frame around the window. The window just goes into the door, into the car itself. The shot hit the frame of the vehicle, but right where the window goes up into it. And you'll see that there is damage to the window, as well as the bullet hole into the frame of the vehicle itself, right above Brandon's head when he was sitting in that driver's seat. You'll hear that when Brandon took off, the window remained in the door, that he drove away and then eventually circled back around and went into his driveway. You'll hear that for a Tesla, when you put the car in park, the door automatically opens and the whole window just shattered out. Brandon was on the phone with 911 soon after the shooting. You'll hear that call, him actually sounding out of breath from the fear. And he waited for the police to arrive. Alex Cox, of course, is Googling how to get out of there and get back to Rexburg, Idaho. And by October 3rd, he was back there. That same day on October 3rd, you will see that Alex Cox and Lori Vallow went back to the storage unit. They removed that rear tire. They removed the rear seat of the Jeep and took it with them. You will again see video of that. You'll also see that they Googled that day news in Gilbert, shootings of Brandon, to try to find out what the police knew. How did the police figure out that this defendant and Alex Cox were involved?
Well, when the police were interviewing Brandon, they asked him if he had any enemies.
Who would want to do this? And Brandon told the police the only people he could think of
was Lori Vallow and Alex Cox.
He told them that Lori had lived in Texas and that the Jeep had a Texas license plate. And he told them about that incident on July 11th of 2019 in Chandler involving Lori Vallow and Alex Cox. And he believed this was all tied together. You'll hear that the Gilbert police reached out to the Chandler Police Department and learned about that Jeep with the Texas plates, LWD-0997, the same plate that was seen on that license plate reader on October 1st coming into Arizona. The Gilbert police learned that Lori Vallow and Alex Cox were living in Rexburg, Idaho, and they reached out to law enforcement there. You'll hear that on November 1st, police in Idaho went to 565 Pioneer Road, that apartment complex, and they saw Lori Vallow, they saw Alex Cox, and they saw Chad Daybell. They didn't see the Jeep that day, and so they went back a few days later on November 4th and saw the Jeep located near Lori Vallow's residence. Tires back on it. Rear seat is back in it. You'll hear that they impounded it. And on November 18th, the Gilbert police flew to Idaho to process it. You're going to learn about GSR, or gunshot residue. You're going to learn that they processed the vehicle. Basically, they're little sticky kits. GSR is microscopic. You can't see it. So you try to collect it, and then you give it to an expert to look through it. You will hear that those kits were sent to the Phoenix Police Department and reviewed, and that particles indicative of gunshot residue were located on the kits that were tested from the rear of that Jeep Wrangler, and that this is consistent with a gun being fired from the rear of the Jeep. You also hear that the Gilbert Police Department collected DNA from areas like the steering wheel, the gear shift, seatbelt buckles, and that they got a blood blot from Alexander Cox. DNA profiles were created from the steering wheel and other areas around the driver's seat. And the DNA was found to be a mixture, multiple people, but the major contributor was Alexander Cox. Again, you will hear that the police executed multiple search warrants on cell phones, cell tower usage, data from Gmail accounts, and data from iCloud accounts. You will see a map of Lori Vallow's cell phone, Alex Cox's cell phone, as well as that burner phone from that Walmart in Idaho Falls, the one that was associated to Alex Cox's Gmail account. You will hear from Nick Valance from the FBI, and he'll show you how that burner phone went from Rexburg, Idaho, down to Gilbert, Arizona, was there for the shooting, and returned back to Rexburg, and was never used again after that. You will learn that the only phone number that that burner phone called or received calls from was Chad Daybell, this defendant's soon-to-be husband. The same phone, of course, that was using those cell towers right around Brandon's home at the time of the shooting. This defendant, Lori Vallow Daybell, has been charged with conspiracy to commit the first-degree murder of Brandon Boudreau on October 2nd of 2019. The evidence in this case will prove to you beyond a reasonable doubt that this defendant conspired with Alex Cox and others to kill Brandon. She provided the means, the Jeep. She helped get the Jeep ready, and she tried to provide an alibi for her co-conspirator. At the end of this trial, the state will ask you all to hold this defendant accountable and find her guilty of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. Thank you.
Opening statements right there from the prosecution against Lori Vallow Daybell in her trial number 3, the third time's the charm, maybe, for Lori. And we'll watch her opening statements, as short as they are, in just a few moments. Your reactions to the opening statements from the defense or the prosecution?
This doesn't feel like it's getting set up very well for Lori. Like, as far as I'm concerned, the case has just been laid out.
Yeah. It's like, here's what happened.
We're good.
Like, can we just end this right now? Because you're about to hear a crazy woman talk, and she's going to say all sorts of nonsensical things to you for the next however many weeks. Let's just end this shit now. Mm-hmm. And
let's cut to the chase. Okay. The burner phone, again, something that we've talked about many, many times, especially with Karen Reed. We've talked about it with Kohlberger case. It is this piece of technology that, and I held up my phone, that I think puts another avenue into nabbing people.
Oh, completely. And yeah.
I mean, know that you laugh at me a lot when I say your phone narcs you out.
No, it does. I don't laugh at that because it does. I laugh at where you kind of go into some of these. And it might know these, like, you go into like brainwave things sometimes. And I'm like, okay, now that's a bit far. But does this damn thing know everything about you? Without a doubt. This is, yes. And we're carrying it around and it's an incredible piece of convenience. And at the same point, if you ever commit a crime, you're fucked. So
unless you are an old school person who doesn't have a cell phone.
But if you have it, you're effed.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And
even if you are an old school person and you don't, let's say you don't have a cell phone, and I'm not trying to give potential murderers, you know, tips here, but let's just say you've got an old style car. Let's say you have a 1992 Corsica. I don't know.
Corsica.
And you have no cell phone and you decide you're going to commit a murder, you might have a better shot at getting away with it than somebody who is listening to this podcast on their brand new Apple iPhone 16.
You can't be using any sort of new vehicle, period. You can't do it. But here's what just speaks to how strong the addiction is to these things. And I'm holding up my phone. Because we know these things. We know how much it tracks us. We know how much data this damn thing has. And yet, people who go out and commit some of these crimes, and they think they've planned it all out very well, still carry their damn cell phones with them. And that just speaks to the addiction of like, oh, it'll be fine. No, it won't.
Nope.
You will be. Even this, we have burner phones that are being tracked here. It's like, look, there's no way around this. If you're going to go commit a crime, you're going to have to be cut off from the internets for a period of time.
And didn't Kohlberger do that? Didn't he shut down a bunch of his... Yeah.
Which was an obvious stupid... Like, he should have just left it at his house.
Yep.
There was really no reason why he needed to take it to this scene. I mean, figure out your directions, dude. You don't need a phone for it. And there's nothing.
But he's a different generation. I bet he's never
completely
used a map.
And there's nothing in his mind of like, I can function without this thing for a period of time. There's no text. There's nothing that I'm going to see on this thing that's going to be more important than me not getting caught. So he's stupid enough to bring it and just turn it off.
Yeah.
It's just, idiocracy all around. Even if you are like, he thought he was such a smart murderer. And then just, your cell phone.
The technology that's going to destroy his case.
But you know it. Like, how dumb are you? How stupid are you? How arrogant are you to think that this stuff is not going to turn your ass in and at least verify all of the dumb things you're doing right now? I mean, that's just, I don't know what the hell it says, but it says something.
It does. And I'm just fascinated with this case. Not so much for what it's representing, but again, here is this common denominator of this little device that we all carry with us that absolutely without it, maybe you could make a case that you're not guilty. Well, you're guilty because this phone says you're
freaking guilty. It does everything. It will tell you where you are. It will also tell you what you're thinking because you're typing into this thing things you're not saying out loud.
Yeah.
And that's getting your thoughts, your Google searches of all the shit that's going through your mind of like second guessing yourself. And this thing just records it. And This is just what you're inputting into it. Wait till a few years from now.
Right?
It'll pull far more than it's already pulling. Yeah. I mean, we're at the beginning.
Best of luck.
Yeah. This is nuts. Okay, let's watch Lori try to be an attorney and see exactly what how this goes down here, because it went so well the last time.
Would the defense like to give an opening statement at this time?
I'll try.
Was that you or her?
That was me.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Hard to tell, though, huh?
For a moment, it's like, did Lori just say that?
Nope.
Here we go. She's got her legal pad. And her glasses. She's coming
up. She is walking.
She's walking up to the lectern. Here we go.
Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, here we are at trial. And the judicial system can be difficult to understand at times. There are laws and rules and statutes that govern how things will proceed in this trial. You yesterday got to hear the preliminary jury instruction, so you kind of got an order of how things are going to go. In order for someone to be charged with a crime, as I have been...
Your Honor, I'm going to object to argument versus a opening statement.
Uh-oh.
And it begins.
I'll remind the defendant, an opening statement should be a preview of what is to be expected at trial. So,
whoops.
Time for the trailer.
Da-da-da. Law enforcement presents evidence that they gather, and the state prosecutors are going to present that to you. Sometimes the state charges a defendant with a crime. They have charged me with a crime, a very serious crime. Sometimes they take the allegations to a grand jury to decide if the defendant should be charged.
I'm going to object again, Your Honor. Improper argument. Asked to strike.
Hold on. The... jury should disregard that last comment. How the charges arrived here are not for the jury's consideration. The prior proceedings are not for the jury's consideration. Please proceed.
Oh.
The state or the prosecution will then take the information gathered, the evidence from law enforcement, and present to you a story, a theory, their hypothesis of what happened. In this case, the prosecutor was not present during this alleged crime. The Gilbert Police Department was not present during this alleged crime. So it is their job to fill in the gaps, make up a theory, and present it to you, the jury, at trial. This is their job. They are not witness to the actual events because they weren't there that day with Brandon at the house when this alleged shooting occurred. This case is about a conspiracy. And a conspiracy is when two or more people make an agreement to commit a crime. They have to willingly and knowingly participate. Conspiracy is an ancient word that appears in the Bible on many occasions.
Oh, we get the Bible.
Oh,
Judas
no.
conspired against Jesus with the chief priest
here we
for
go.
30 pieces of silver.
Object to, unless this is being presented at trial, I'm not sure that this is appropriate opening.
We have a flag on the play.
Legal objection? Hold,
well, you're arguing.
She's already way out of the gate.
It's not argument.
Penalty on the field.
I'm going to allow it briefly, but I may cut you off depending on where you're going.
Straight to hell, I think.
Evil his brother. This case is a case of conspiracy. The charge against me is that I conspired with my brother, Alex Cox, to murder my niece's husband, Brandon Boudreaux. But you will find, as you begin to see the evidence put forth in this case, that there was not any animosity between Brandon and myself. I personally did not have any motivation to have harm come to Brandon. In fact, Brandon and I had a very friendly relationship all of the time that I have known him. I first met Brandon when he was marrying my niece, Melanie.
Your Honor, I'm going to check to...
Here we go.
The defendant's testifying.
She's arguing.
Can I have the parties approach briefly? Can I have you... approach briefly.
Sidebar.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the Super Bowl, and like we didn't even get through two plays before there were just flags flying everywhere.
This isn't the Super Bowl. This is the Pro Bowl game when they actually used to play the Pro Bowl game.
You're right.
This is that, because it's like, it's already done. This is just like, let's bring him out one more time just for fun, and we can take some pictures and go, I got to see them on the field.
Yeah, they got to go to Hawaii for exactly. the game. That's all.
Exactly. Here comes Lori back to the
stand. And I'm not an attorney, and I could feel she was already arguing.
It's not going as well as the last trial.
I first met Brandon when he was marrying my niece, Melanie. Melanie and I are very close because my sister, her mother, passed away when she was just 9 years old. So Melanie and I think of each other and love each other like a mother and daughter,
even though
we are aunt and niece. So our families remained close, Melanie and Brandon's family and my family. In each other's lives, like everyday lives. We spent holidays together and shared in everyday life.
Bring up the enchiladas.
I was there for Melanie and Brandon's wedding and for the birth of all four of their children.
I still need that recipe.
Close to all four of their children.
I need to make the fucking cookbook.
Yeah, you do. Case, get on that, Tony. What have you been doing?
Himself tell yes. you that someone shot a gun at his car.
Yeah, I know.
You will learn in this testimony that Brandon was not hurt. You will learn.
Well, that makes it better.
I wasn't even sure what had
we
happened.
Missed.
But you will hear that Brandon immediately blamed me.
Of course they did, because you've killed everyone question, around you.
Was I an enemy to Brandon?
Yes.
That is news to me, and hopefully by the end of this trial, we will all have some answers
You're
to that
an enemy
question.
To humanity.
In this case, you will learn that Brandon had called 911, and Gilbert Police did respond.
Well,
you
yeah.
will learn that Brandon speaks of a puke green Jeep. And then he offers the officers a camo green color that he's speaking of on his phone. He says a green Jeep. Then you will hear the neighbor who says that it was a dark blue Jeep that was parked in front of the neighbor's house. You will learn that Brandon very quickly hired a private investigator to find out where I was living out of the state of Arizona so he could inform the police. You will see Brandon exchange email information with Detective Piller, the case agent in this case, about my whereabouts and about the financial dealings of my niece, Melanie Boudreau. You will learn that Brandon was not particularly satisfied with the investigation that Gilbert Police was conducting, so he did his own investigation, hiring his own private investigator to follow his wife, Melanie Boudreau. You will find out that Brandon had access to the VIN number of a Jeep and gave it to the police. You will find out that after that event, he quickly changed his story from a camo green Jeep to a gray Jeep. You will then learn that Brandon continued to provide information he was personally finding out to Detective Piller, the case agent in this case. You will learn that Detective Piller and Brandon discussed through email how they can demonstrate Melanie's financial gain if Brandon were to have died around October 2nd, 2019. This is what a conspiracy looks like. Two people trying to set up another person for a crime. My niece, Melanie Boudreau, is named by the state as a co-conspirator. However, she has not been charged with the crime.
I'm going to object
but
and
I
have that struck as well, Your Honor.
Jury should disregard that statement. You're going to receive an instruction later that all persons that may be involved would not necessarily be charged or called as witnesses, and you'll follow those instructions later. Go ahead.
I was not living in Arizona at the time this alleged incident happened on October 2nd, 2019. I was not even aware such an event had taken place. I did have a close relationship with my brother Alex, but I was not aware of his every move. Melanie also had a close relationship with Alex, but also was not aware of his location at all times. Brandon and Alex also had a good relationship until this accusation. They saw each other frequently at all of our family parties and get-togethers and would often be seen laughing and talking.
Enchiladas, bring it
up. Alex was a comedian who kept our family laughing. Alex passed away in December 2019 of natural causes, so he is not here to defend himself.
And I'm going to object again to that as well, since he's not party to this.
All right, I'll just remind the jury that what is said in opening statements is not evidence. It's not sworn testimony.
Look at the judge. He's just
rubbing his head like I am right now. He's just so
although
like.
The state has alleged that there are several co-conspirators in this case. I am the only one being charged with a crime. So you will be the judge. You will hear and see evidence presented by the state. The state has, according to the law, 100% burden to prove to you that
I would object to misstatement crime. Of the law in terms of 100%.
All right. Again, this is a little bit bordering on argument, but the jury will receive the instructions on what is and what is not proof beyond a reasonable doubt.
This is just like, just let her go. Just let her say
whatever. The state has the burden to prove that a crime has been committed here and that I committed that crime. That is the way the law is written. I do not have to show any evidence or put up a defense. I do not have to testify.
Oh, is that what she's already telling us?
The prosecutors from the state have to prove to you that I conspired, meaning made an agreement with my brother to murder Brandon. So you will decide. Right now, according to the law, I am innocent. I remain innocent until the state of Arizona and its prosecutors show you enough evidence to convince you that I had anything to do with this alleged crime. And I want you to look carefully and determine if this invent was a crime at all.
Invent?
Did a shooting actually occur? Only Brandon claims that it did. Only Brandon names me and Alex. You will learn that Brandon himself did own a gun. You will learn that Brandon knew how to shoot his gun. You will learn that Brandon and Melanie were going through a divorce. And you will learn that even though Brandon is the one who actually filed for a divorce, he was blaming me for his divorce. You will learn that the information that the Gilbert Police Department and Detective Piller, the case agent on this case, learned about me and my brother Alex was from Brandon Boudreau. You will learn that Brandon and Detective Piller communicated frequently and were on a first-name basis. I want you to look closely at the motivation of Brandon and the Gilbert Police Department because I'm the only one charged with the crime. And I need you to decipher what really happened here because I'm the only one who's being asked to pay a consequence for this
crime. Again, Your Honor, I'm asked to object and strike that.
Sustained. The jury in their instructions received an instruction that said the jury is not to consider a penalty. That will be in the final instructions as well. The jury's job is to determine whether or not the state has proved the case beyond a reasonable doubt or the charge beyond a reasonable doubt. Go ahead, proceed.
You will hear many references during this trial about the state versus Lori Daybell. Well, who is the state? The state are the prosecutors.
I object to argument and relevance.
Who is the state? Sustained.
God.
And you, the jury, are brought in to stand between the state and me.
And I'm going to object again to improper statement of the law, argument, and relevance.
Sustained.
You are here to say if a crime has even been committed at all. You are here to say if I committed this very crime and if the state proved this to you beyond a reasonable doubt. If at the end of this trial you have reasonable doubt, then I remain innocent. If the state does not prove to you that I, one, committed a crime, and two, committed this crime, then I remain innocent.
Is that how it works, Lori?
In this case, you will hear a lot of speculation. The definition of speculation is an idea or guess about something that is not known. During this trial, the state will try to convince you that I committed this crime by using speculation, innuendo, and insinuation. And the state is hoping that this will be enough. In this trial, you will in fact witness a power struggle between the state and the defendant,
Your Honor, for what a fact really argument. Is.
Sustain.
Because they want to convince you, the jury, that a fact is speculation, that a fact is innuendo, that a fact is insinuation, that they knew what I was thinking, what I was feeling, what I was planning, when they don't know at all. You, the jury, have all the power to decide what the facts are and what they're not. Not the state, not the judge, not law enforcement. You. So I implore you to listen carefully and decide for yourselves if the state's theory really makes logical sense. What motivation did I have? What malice have I ever shown to anyone? What benefit would I gain? I am a person who loves all people and has no malice towards anyone, not even the prosecutors who wrongfully try to convict me.
Your Honor, I'm going to object again to relevance and to argument.
Sustained.
God.
I am all about spreading love and will continue to do so even after this trial is complete, no matter the result. Thank you.
All about spreading love. And that's
like a butterfly.
All right, the state can call its first witness.
That's what Lori leaves it at. Brandon Boudreau is the first witness.
Thank you. The state will call Brandon Boudreau.
I'm just going to leave it up for a second because you said how you thought he was so sexy and lovable and how you wanted to make love to him on the stand.
I said he's cute.
Clerk.
And how you just wanted to just get in there. And
I did not say that. I think he's got some sad eyes and
there's Brandon. Sad eyes. Isn't that a song?
It is. Yes.
What song is that? Sad eyes.
It's by Sad Eyes by.
All right, sir. Go around the court reporter.
Yeah. Turn the other way. I don't want to see you cry.
There's Brandon.
Is it about what we discussed earlier? The state's probably going to, you won't complete your direct before lunch.
I don't believe so. No.
Okay.
Sad eyes right there, Stacey. He needs some healing.
Robert John.
Robert John. There we go. That's Brandon Boudreau. We're not going to watch his testimony because we've already gone long enough. But there you go. That's the opening statements in the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell, number 3.
Is this the last one? Are there more coming?
Well, as long as she doesn't get anything on appeal, this is the last one.
Oh, God.
So
it's like the last sequel in a series.
Yeah, but you know, like Indiana Jones had like the 3 that were really good, yeah. And all those years later, there was like the new ones that came out that everyone's
well,
like
Star
like,
Wars. You know, all of a sudden like, they're back.
It's like it's okay. It's like it's good. It's not the first ones. So
Maverick,
who knows?
Top Gun. I mean, come on, sequels can be good.
Well, that was enough because. That only had one movie in it, though. They didn't do sequels immediately. They took all those years to do the sequel.
They should have, though.
But they didn't. And
but they should have.
Well, yes, maybe they should have, but they didn't. And that was a good sequel. This seems you're at the 3. They did 3 in a row here now. And we're at the 3rd version of the, you know, we're starting to just get to repetitive territory.
Yeah.
And it's the same shit. And of course she tried to kill him because I don't know why, but there was something that, you know, he was speaking out against or something that didn't go into the plan where he wasn't, you know, a zombie. I'm sure that's all it was. And now we get to argue this in a court of law, and all these people get to spend their time and taxpayer dollars to argue an insane premise by a crazy woman. And we entertain this in the United States of America as being somehow valid or after we've already found her guilty of these other ones, like, let's still keep going with this and not just go, she's insane. Let's stop wasting money.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. We should just go back to witch burning because I think, you know.
I think we found a witch.
She would go up. She would go up as a witch. I think we'd be more refined on it this day and age if we do witch burning, but I think she would be viewed as a witch.
Are you a good witch or a bad witch?
Look at her. I mean, my God.
I do miss the top knot, though, her little ponytail thing. I wonder, did she have it?
Today? I don't think Did she? I don't know.
I'm sorry.
No, she didn't have it today. No, there was no top knot.
Okay, yeah, I didn't think so. No. So I'm hoping we'll see that come out at some point. So, you know, fashion-wise, she looked pretty good for being so horribly ill.
Yes, being deadly ill. Who knows what we're going to see? He's forcing it. So it's like basically she shows up and does her job, or they're just going to probably move on to the defense and or the prosecution, rather. Or the prosecution is going first. But they're going to do their whole damn thing. And if she doesn't have anything to cross anybody on, and she's nothing to... She has no story to bring up, because it almost sounds like she's planting that seed right now of like, I don't have to prove anything. You're right, Lori, you don't technically. But if you want to be found innocent by any reasonable doubt, you have to present something. I'm sure she won't. That's why I'm saying this is going to be a quick trial. I know they have 6 to 7 weeks here. They're going to present the case in about a week on the prosecution side, and Lori's going to rest. We'll be done with this before July 4th. Guaranteed.
Okay, I'm going to hold you to that.
Hold me to that. If not, I will buy you a giant box of fireworks.
Okay, how am I going to get them? Because you can't ship them.
I'll secretly ship them. No, I don't know. But I don't know. Like, there's something.
I want details, man.
You don't even want fireworks because you got pets. So I will.
Right.
And I don't know that I'm coming to Wisconsin this summer either. So I will.
I'll trade it in for something else.
I'll
be like,
send
you
get
those
food.
Little tickets.
I'll send you football? A gift certificate to a lovely restaurant there in Wausau, Wisconsin. And
right.
I don't know what a good restaurant is anymore, but I will send you a gift certificate to it.
Okay. Everybody heard that. We are going to hold you to that. So you said it's going to get wrapped before the 4th of July.
200. Are you going to bet against me?
Okay. What do you want?
$100 gift certificate to a restaurant of your choice.
Okay.
I'll buy you it. You buy me it, if I'm right.
Okay. All right, fine.
She goes beyond July 4th. There you go.
All right. You heard it here.
I'm going to guess. I mean, and we're on June 5th already. So you got pretty good odds here, actually, because they're estimating 6 weeks. July 4th is 4 weeks in.
Okay.
We're about 4 weeks from the 4th of July. So let that one sink in. We're a month away from it. So I think it will be done before then.
Okay.
I'm not going to say a date. I'm just going to say before the 4th of July. And sentencing is not part of it. It's just case in chief wraps up. It's done. Sentencing, they'll be like, well, we're going to do sentencing in like 5 weeks from now or something. But will they end up with a verdict before then? That's what we're betting on, is the verdict.
I'm probably going to lose this.
No, I think you're going to win this. Maybe. I don't know.
All right. I guess we'll
I think
see.
You're going to lose it. That's why I'm betting on it. Cause I know like the prediction is longer. I just don't see it. She's not going to do anything. The prosecution's only going to go for like a week or two.
All maybe. Right.
And
can you just take it out of my check instead of me having to send it to you?
No, you have to send me the damn, but you'll send me a gift certificate for a restaurant that doesn't exist here. That'll make it really great.
Oh, that'll be fun.
You send me a gift certificate to the Back When Cafe in Wausau, Wisconsin. They'll have to go up there to redeem it at some point in time.
I like that little carrot at the end of the stick. Yeah.
I like that one. Then I will show up at some point in time to redeem it.
Actually, I'll hold on to it until you send me something you've been trying to send me.
I can do that. Yeah.
Tony's had something sitting on his desk for like 2 months.
Yeah. I mail's not my forte. So
something I need for work.
Yeah. I have to do that. But I don't know. I just don't think it's going to go very long. I could be completely wrong. It could go chaosville. It's her last stand. Anything is possible. It's Lori Vallow Daybell. So it's like soak up the last chapter here, because I don't think there's going to be another one. I just don't. We shall see. What do you guys think? Tell us in the comments when you think this thing's going to wrap up. Whose side are you on? Do you think Stacey will win this bet, or I will win this bet? Mm-hmm. Tell us in the comments on YouTube or X or wherever you're watching this. And do press subscribe as well, so you don't miss any of the coverage of this case or the many that we follow for you right here. For Stacey, I'm Tony. We'll talk again real soon.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now.
and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.